Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here, you need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show and backed by popular demand, and I say popular demand because I'm an analytics believer. I believe in analytics. We get analytics on every show. We get analytics on every beer garden. I know what works. Kind of know what doesn't. What works? You guys like football. Y'all like coaching searches. You like people who have opinions. You like Chris Landry a lot of LandryFootball.com. You like him a bunch. And then you like Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey, I don't say this just to blow sunshine. It's the truth.
Surprise.
Of the top 10 beer gardens, you're like number 2, 4, 5, 8, and 10.
Yeah, I like that. I'm not number one. I left some room to grow.
You do have room to grow, so you have something to aspire to.
I've been saying that since 2003, so we're good there too.
But that's pretty strong because we've had some pretty good guests on the Beer Garden. But you did not beat the one that had Chris Landry and Andy Staples. That got you. But you're right there. Numbers-wise, you're close.
Well, that's good to know because Chris Landry and Andy Staples have talent. So I'm glad to see that there is still meritocracy in this world.
Well, you have some talent too. Jeffrey is, as you know, the former host of this program, former co-host of the Oxford Exxon podcast, and he is now with the Jeff Calkins Show and other shows on ESPN 92.9 in Memphis, doing a lot of Memphis Grizzlies coverage. The Grizzlies, the undefeated season is over, 81-1, still very much in play. The Grizzlies will not go 82-0. They lost in Dallas last night, but they're 3-1, off to a good start, and we might get to a little NBA in a minute. I want to talk some JFK. I want to talk, we'll probably end up talking about the lab issue that I'm having right now that's becoming problematic. And we're going to talk some coaching. So we're going to give some opinions, not even hot takes, just some thoughts. Because before we started this, we were doing sort of debates about who would take what job and why and is that a good job. And I don't know that we've sorted it out, so we'll try to sort it out here in just a second. So we'll get to Jeffrey in just a minute. First, let me tell you, it's we're brought to you by the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next to the Oxford Exxon. We tell you all the time about the Mixed 5 for 5. Jeffrey has his go-tos. You can get the spicy chick in that. You can shake up your combo, your 5 for 5 for a buck, and you get the ice cream. But this weekend, 49-cent wings at the Oxford Crystal all day Saturday. So you're headed into the Grove early, or you're having a party after the game, getting stuff for the Grove after Ole Miss, Arkansas. 49-cent wings would be quite tasty. Maybe you're not groving. Maybe you're just going to the game. Then you're heading home to watch Mississippi State and A&M or game 4 of what appears to be a pretty good World Series. 49-cent wings, and then all day Sunday, the NFL game 5 of the World Series assured to happen in Houston. 49-cent wings all weekend from the Oxford Crystal. We are coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call that number, ask for Corey Clark, tell Corey what new Ford you are looking for, and he will send you a quote. 15 minutes of business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. He's not going to haggle. He's going to offer you a great deal. You get the deal, and then it's up to you. You cannot believe him, and you can shop it and shop it and shop it. It's your prerogative, as Bobby Brown would say. Or you can do the smart thing, and that's let Corey Clark and the people at Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience for you, as they have done for so many other listeners of our family of podcasts. 662-257-1900. At the end of the deal, tell Corey, hey, Corey, I heard about the dealership on the podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden. You can mention the Oxford Exxon podcast. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Any of the above, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory. So, Jeffrey, you were kind enough to join us earlier this morning. We talked about the games themselves. So let's get into the jobs, because that's frankly a lot sexier than a bunch of bad games. You're the guest. Where do you want to start?
I want to start here. Let's start with let's go through what we think is actually going to be open before we start talking about fits, because okay. I get it. It's October the 26th, and this could, as we've seen in the SEC, it can change basically on a week-to-week basis because, you know, basically a month ago, you know, 3 weeks ago, we thought Gus Malzahn was going to be safe and going to be fine, and now I think if we had to bet today, I think we'd probably think otherwise. But yes. let's start with where we think for sure is going to be open.
Okay. All right. I'll start in the West. Ole Miss is going to be open.
Okay.
If you made me guess today, I would guess Mississippi State's going to be open. I would guess Auburn is going to be open. I would guess Arkansas is going to be open, at least temporarily. Alabama obviously is safe, barring a human thing. LSU is safe, barring a human thing. And Texas A&M. Woo. Boy, I wish we could. I wish I could know the result of tomorrow night, because I don't think he can keep losing to Mississippi schools and keep his gig. I think he wants out of his gig. I thought there was a landing spot for him, except Arizona State keeps winning. I will say that Texas A&M is open, but as crazy as this sounds, of the five, that's the one I'm least assured of. And that's a deal where the first night of the season, I would have said, well, he's the one guy that's definitely gone.
Okay, I don't have any dispute on any of those. I, for whatever reason, I can't explain it. It just seems like to me, the only other one that I could see giving another chance is Arkansas, because A, he's liked to an extent.
Yeah.
And B, I mean, he lost his quarterback, and like there were basically everything that could have gone wrong for him this year did go wrong. And I could see where Jeff Long just bites the bullet and says, let's give this one more shot.
Yeah, because, you know, it's funny. People talk about, and look, you and I had this conversation this morning. It's one thing people go, oh, well, you know, the buyouts are, there's ways around all that stuff. That being said, that's real money.
Well, on top of that, it's one thing to say, let's get rid of him. You know, people are agitated. People are frustrated. This hasn't worked. Let's look at his record. This clearly hasn't worked. But the question inevitably becomes, who are you going to go get? And who are you going to get that's better? And who are you going to get that financially it makes sense that this is a better option than what we have?
Because you and I talked about this a minute ago, and it is true. The moment you fire Coach A, it's no longer his problem. You really don't get to blame him much anymore. You get to blame him for just a little while, and then people quickly move past that, and they start launching into Coach B. Honeymoons don't last long at all. They last one bad loss. That's it. So when you're Arkansas and you fire Brett Bielema, who took Wisconsin to 3 Rose Bowls, you do have to have some introspection. And you do have to, this is where it's really hard. You do have to be willing to take a step back, look at your job with a realistic eye and ask, okay, he didn't work out, but are our expectations too high? What did we do wrong? How did we not help him? Because he won at Wisconsin, and he's probably going to get a job somewhere else. And when we hired him, we believed he was the guy. Certainly some of it is his fault. How much of it is our fault?
Yeah, you'll get varying opinions on that about what Arkansas expectations are. I still believe that Arkansas hasn't come to grips with the fact that, to me, the one school that was hurt the most by the addition of Texas A&M has been Arkansas, because Arkansas was able to go into Texas a little bit and say, you can come play in the SEC, and they could get a few players that way. And I don't think that that has been factored in to the aspect of, okay, where do we stand in terms of where is our job?
No, I agree with that. All right, let's finish with the East, and then we'll get to it.
Okay.
Georgia's safe. Kirby's not going anywhere. Tennessee, I think, would be open. Kentucky will not be open. Vanderbilt will not be open. Probably should be, but it won't be. South Carolina's not open. Will's very safe. Missouri potentially open. The AD said as much. AD said earlier this week he'd like to keep him, but, you know, crazier things, which is a real shaky vote of confidence if I've ever heard one. And then Florida is going to be open.
Okay.
Man, so we're talking potentially, we had five in the West, and then potentially Tennessee, Florida, and Missouri in the East. So potentially more than half the league. Now, I asked Chris Lowe earlier this week, I don't know if he had a chance to listen to it, if the over-under is 4.5, do you go over or under? And he sort of shocked me, and he said under. I'd go over, but it's a chance that people like me are being hyperbolic here.
Well, I don't think that's the issue. I do think that when we're in the season, emotions run a little bit higher, and these questions that you and I are asking are inevitably the questions that get asked at the 11th hour. And another aspect of it that you know full well, and the only reason why I know it's because I've learned it from you, there's so many discussions in back channels about who can we go get. Because part of the reason why Les Miles kept his gig in 2015 was LSU's conversations with Jimbo broke down. And then when they couldn't go get Jimbo, then Les Miles has his big emotional win against Texas A&M at home. They carry him off the field, and they decide, hey, man, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. And so you wind up keeping that. And so at this point in 2015, we thought there was no way Les Miles would keep his job. So you wind up in that situation, which a guy maybe gets an extra year because other things fell through. But with the jobs that we've mentioned, another aspect of this is the fact that some of these guys are inevitably just going to dig their own graves. Like Butch Jones, in my opinion, is going to inevitably dig his own grave. But you have several jobs where, you know, this is a two-way street. It's not just, hey, we're going to fire you. At a certain point, some of these guys are like, you know what? I've had enough of it here. And I got other options. And I'm at this point, Kyle, that's the one thing I've always found. Like, for a group of people that are inherently so risk averse, like when you look at coaches in general, they are risk averse people. They are not afraid of moving on for the sake of, honestly, I guess it's really perception, reality, whatnot, but they really are, they're not afraid of change.
Oh, no, they're not afraid of change. And in large part, change means you get to reset the clock.
Which is always funny because most of them are afraid of, on field, they're afraid of change. They don't like changing the offense, changing the defense. But when it comes to their livelihood, it's always funny how someone is always more willing to act in his own favor and change for that sake. But as it pertains to his football program, they're usually not ready to change.
Oh, exactly. All right. So let's talk about some of the jobs and who you think is a realistic candidate.
Well, let's before we do that, let's power rank what we think. Because I agree with you. So here's the list that we have. We have Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Auburn, A&M, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, and Missouri. So let's now, based on conversations that we've had with people that know the industry, based on our knowledge of recruiting bases, fan bases, financial realities, let's rank what we think to Coach A, who's going to have multiple options. Let's put ourselves in the position that we're an attractive coach, we don't have any geographical ties, and we just get to come in blindly and say, I want to take the best available job to me. Is that a fair parameter?
Yeah, it's impossible to do, but let's give it a shot. It'll be fine.
Right.
And we're going to make just the coach is just Johnny Vanilla.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Let's take out any geographic. Like, we're trying to make this as objective as possible, and we both understand it is inherently a subjective list that we're making, but we are trying to make it as objective as possible.
Okay. I have no idea how to do that, but I'll start. Out of that list, the one that would be the most appealing off the top of my head is Florida. I start to say obviously Florida, but I don't think there is an obviously, and here's why. Two guys have won at Florida. Everyone else has failed. The two guys that have won at Florida have won everywhere. Steve Spurrier won everywhere he ever went. Urban Meyer won at Utah. He won at Florida, and he's winning at Ohio State. So it's hard for me to go, Florida's a great job when only legendary coaches win there. That said, obviously a great recruiting base, lots of talent, as good a fan base as anybody else. I think that's overrated. They can pay well. They historically don't pay huge. Strickland's a decent boss. Gainesville's an okay place to live. It's a good job. Now, I'm in the minority. I don't think it's a top 10 national job. I don't. I think it's a really good job. It might be a top 10 job sometimes. I don't think it's a perennial top 10 job the way that Ohio State, Alabama, USC, probably Michigan, jobs like that are typically top 10 jobs.
I think it's very equivalent to Michigan, personally, because I do think that when you look at Michigan, I mean, Jim Harbaugh is struggling right now. And to me, Jim Harbaugh is an elite football coach. And I say struggling, but I mean, you understand. Based on the product and the return that Michigan is getting in the investment, he's struggling.
Well, compared, his problem is that he's in the same division with two of, and I think both guys are scumbags, but they're both phenomenal football coaches.
Yeah, I don't mind a scumbag if he wins. I mean, personally, I mean, you know what I mean?
Oh, it doesn't matter to me. If I'm a fan, I don't care.
Honestly, if I'm an athletic director, I don't care if he wins.
Keep it under control and under wraps.
Yes. I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be sloppy, but yeah, I don't really care what he does in his bedroom.
It's not even that. I mean, don't be a criminal. I mean, that's my biggest problem with Franklin is that I think what he did was borderline criminal, and if you made me say it, I think he helped cover up one of the most hideous crimes that you can commit.
Agreed 1,000%.
So that, I mean, as it pertains to Franklin, that is my issue.
Yeah, I think he likely was complicit in covering up an egregious crime. Or attempting to. At the very least, attempted to badger a witness.
Yes.
My opinion.
On what I've read, based on information I've been told by people that I really, really respect and people that I don't think emotionally swing, because college football is an emotional, very, very emotional entity. But based on the conversations that I have, I 100% agree.
Okay, so we're putting Florida first?
Yes. All right. Here was my quick power rankings, and you can tell me if you disagree.
Okay.
Because I think it'll be easier this way because logically that just makes the most sense. All right. Okay. I have Florida number one, and I do agree with you. Another factor for me that would be in the negative column, you know, if I'm getting my legal pad out and I'm doing pros on the left, cons on the right, Jimbo Fisher has a machine going at Florida State from a recruiting in-state perspective, from, shall we say, a commitment perspective.
I think there's a rumor there, though.
He wants out?
It's a rumor that he's the next guy at A&M.
I'll believe it when I see it, because there's one thing I'll say about Jimbo. Jimbo is not afraid to throw his name in the hat to get, I don't know what more he could get at Florida State, but he is not afraid of throwing his name in the hat to get something else.
Oh, there's no question about that.
And, you've known Jimbo for a really long time, and Jimbo understands first and foremost, I take care of Jimbo first. So the other issue for me with Florida is, you seen the recruiting rankings, my man?
They recruited a really high level at Florida State. They struggle at Florida.
You seen who's currently number two? In my opinion, the most objective and the most fair recruiting rankings, which is the rivals team rankings. You seen who's number two?
I'm embarrassed to admit that I haven't looked.
Well, in fairness, I completely understand from this year. Miami's sitting at number two. And so, and
Mark's going to do well.
Mark's the perfect coach for Miami because he's an adult. And if you can recruit at the level that Miami has at times recruited, and then you add an adult who is a proven head coach and has a pretty substantial resume of putting a consistent product on the field, hello, look out. So Florida right now, I have not been convinced that Florida will ever, at least from an institution, that Florida will ever do what is necessary to compete in college football.
Oh, I agree. I don't think their network is what some people want to believe it to be.
Because you can tell me if you disagree. I thought when Jim McElwain was ranting after the SEC championship game, when he was ranting about commitment and about, he had that what people thought was an absurd tirade. Everyone else took it to mean facilities and the institutional infrastructure of the Florida football program. I took that to be, we don't have the network. We don't do what's actually necessary to compete in the state and to compete at the national level.
Okay, so who do you have after Florida?
All right, so after that, I had Texas A&M. And I had Texas A&M for two reasons. Number one, I think it is a good job. I don't think that it is as good of a job as Texas A&M thinks it is, but I understand that. Usually most schools think their job's better than it is, but you just start comparing it to the ones behind them, and I personally think I would rather have Texas A&M because I think I have more access to what it takes to win at Texas A&M than I do at the schools behind it.
Texas A&M in the Big 12 was an 8-9 win program.
Agreed.
Texas A&M in the SEC has been an 8-9 win program.
Agreed.
So it's an 8-9 win program.
Yes. The problem is look what else we have on our board.
The boosters want it to be an 11 win program.
I get that, but do you really think that if Chris Peterson were at Texas A&M that it wouldn't be an 11 win program?
Oh, I think it would be.
Because to me, this is what it all comes down to.
Here's the thing, right? So how many coaches out there nationally? This is going to be part of the Ole Miss debate, and people are going to get mad at me when I say this. people talk about Scott Frost, for example. Scott Frost isn't a sure thing.
Completely agree with you.
People talk about Mike Norvell. Mike's done a really good job.
I think Justin Fuente was more of a sure thing than Mike Norvell is, personally.
Mike Norvell might end up being a great coach. Mike Norvell's not a sure thing. Who's a sure thing? Nick Saban? Urban Meyer?
I think David Shaw's a sure thing. Week to week. They may get beat, but week to week, how many times do you watch a Stanford game and go, you know, they just weren't ready to play?
No, you're right. He's a sure thing. James Franklin, as much as it pains me, is a sure thing.
I agree.
They win. Jimbo's a sure thing.
I agree, but good God, what are we watching this year?
Well, this is what, look, man, any school, you lose the quarterback week one, and it can get iffy fast.
But the way that they're recruiting, Neil, there's no way that they should have, do they have one or two wins right now?
Two. But, you're right. Here's the thing. Kids are smarter now. You're not going to get, unless you're Georgia, somehow, some way, the power of the G. You're not going to get multiple elite quarterbacks to go to one place. They're not going to wait in line. That's not the way the game's played anymore.
No, I'd agree with that.
And so when you have one, and Francois had the potential to be one, when you have one and he goes down in week one, it's a scramble.
Yes, especially when your next option was a true freshman.
Right. So I'm willing to give him a mulligan. I think Dabo is a sure thing given what he's done at Clemson. And then I'm not sure there's another guy. Maybe there's somebody I'm missing.
Chris Peterson's a sure thing, in my opinion.
You're right. There you go. Chris Peterson's a sure thing. And I know there's talk about him at Texas A&M. I'll believe it when I see it. If you can get Chris Peterson, go for it. But outside of those guys, there's no guarantee, for example, that Scott Frost is any better coach in the SEC than Kevin Sumlin.
I completely agree with you.
Might be. Might end up being, look, I mean, you might play this back in 5 years, and I'm going, boy, I was wrong. But, and while I think Scott Frost would be a home run hire at any SEC school, when people go, well, that's, hey, we solved that. Start celebrating. It's done. No, it doesn't work like that. I don't think there's a guy out there, unless you believe that you can get Peterson or you believe that you can get Franklin, I don't think there's a guy out there that you can go get and say, okay, well, we took care of football. We can look at volleyball or something now because we've got this taken care of. I just don't think there's a guarantee. I think the margin between being good and being average is super thin in the league. I think the league is watered down. I think while the network has been great for pocketbooks, I think it has leveled the field to a point that, it's kind of homogenous. Everybody's kind of the same.
It's my larger point, and I know I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, and if you're bored with it and you're frustrated with it, go. I'm sorry. It's why I will never, ever, 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 ever understand why schools and the decision makers become so attached to coaches, because I have run the numbers. I have studied this to really a degree that is borderline, like, obsessive. The lion's share of coaches are average. Doesn't mean that I think they're all bad. What I'm saying is, I think they all relatively coach to the, what you just mentioned, the win level of a certain job. A&M's an 8-9 win job. Here's the truth, Neil. Kevin Sumlin's actually exceeded the average win percentage of every coach at Texas A&M. And, you know, they're frustrated and they want to run him out of town. And does that mean that I think Kevin Sumlin is in the category of the guys that we just mentioned? Absolutely not. My point is, when you end up becoming so invested in a coach that in reality is doing a job that there is more than one other person can do. I will never understand why universities and athletic departments hamstring themselves financially to these coaches, because I just personally believe the best way to go about it is, unless you have Urban Meyer, unless you have any of these guys that we just mentioned, Nick Saban, Chris Peterson, unless you have, you know, so on and so forth, David Shaw, whomever it may be, you end up inevitably costing yourself because you treat these coaches like you treat a pet. And I've always used the metaphor, shout out to my buddy Marshall, who's the one that gave me the metaphor because it came from the tech world. You got to treat them like cattle. When they're useful and you're getting a return on your investment, you absolutely milk that bad boy for what it's worth. But once
feed it all, that's grass and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But once you get past that point, you are better off as an institution letting that coach walk, because if you really do believe that he's the only human being that can do the job that is currently being done, well, then you're
just shut the program down.
Right. And then you're largely speaking out of both sides of your mouth. How can you say, you know, how can you promote your program as, you know, the propaganda that every school will promote its program, and then believe, well, this is the only guy that can do it? You let that guy walk. You let someone else give you money to get that guy to walk. And then you go find another hungry guy, because most of these coaches, they're human beings. You work and you grind and you grind like all of us. Like, I mean, think about how much hungrier you chase stories when you were trying, you know, when you were on the Auburn beat, when you were, you know, when you were at the place in your life where you were trying to make the name Neil McCready matter. Think about how much harder and think about how much hungrier you were.
Sure.
And then inevitably you get to the point where the name Neil McCready matters. And guess what? You don't have to do the same things that you did 10 years ago. But the problem is, in college football, when you stop doing that, inevitably your program starts to have cracks. And then those cracks can eventually shatter. And that's why you see these like cataclysmic failures that we see when these guys had success. So start using that cycle to your advantage. Get these up-and-comers, and then in 10 to 15 years, you've turned your program from an 8-win program to a 10-win program, and then all of a sudden when you try to call the Chris Peterson of the world and say, I've got $8 million a year for you, complete and utter control, he's not hanging up. He's taking the phone call. And that's
it's why the whole, well, let's get somebody who will stay argument is ridiculous.
You and I have never agreed more on that. Like, it's preposterous to me.
I have no, we'll continue to use Scott Frost as an example, and no, this isn't cryptic. I have no idea whether Ross Bjork is or is not interested in Scott Frost, or whether he would or would not be able to convince Scott Frost to take the Ole Miss job. I have no idea. I'll work to find out soon, but I haven't yet. But let's take him as an example. If Scott Frost goes to Ole Miss, if I tell you, hey, in 5 years, this guy's the head coach at Ohio State / Southern Cal / whatever, Florida State. Well, let me tell you the second part of that. They won big. You won big. He turned your program around. Because Ohio State's not hiring the Ole Miss coach if the Ole Miss coach is going 5-7, 6-6, 7-5, 5-7. Not happening. No chance. Ohio State is going after the Ole Miss coach because they went 6-6, 8-4, 10-2, 11-1, national playoff. Which means that the new guy walks in, and there's a lot of stuff that's built up for his success. And now he just has to maintain. Or he can build on it.
Momentum.
And if he leaves in 4 years, well, that means that he maintained it. And he went 10-2, 8-4, 11-1, 10-2, guess what? You just had the best decade in your program's history.
Right, because you...
I'm the third guy. What difference does it make?
Right, because instead of having to deal with the inevitable crash that comes with, you know, a 5-win and then a 4-win season, and then you're having to rebuild the whole freaking thing again, you're building on the momentum that you got out of that 10-win season.
Yeah, you wish that guy well, man. You go to his house, like, you help pack up the stuff and you say nice things about him. And 20 years later, you bring him back to campus and introduce him at halftime, and all the people stand and cheer. Yay, Coach Frost. I remember those 5 years. That's what you don't want, frankly. I'm not trying to pick on Hugh Freeze here. The disaster finish, where you fall off the cliff and there's a sex scandal and all that stuff, and your program gets gutted by NCAA stuff. No, you want to succeed to the point that the, quote, big boys want to take your coach. And if two coaches later, you're still winning at a really high level, to some degree, you just became a big boy.
Exactly. Like, it's how the business world operates. Like, it's never made sense to me. Like, and I do understand largely the people that run college athletics are from that world. And I'm not crapping on that world. I have two or three of guys that I know I can pick up the phone and are lifelong friends in that world. But they come entirely from that world, and that world is a bubble. And it's like Pepperdine, for instance. Pepperdine was such a bubble that was completely and utterly, you know, removed from reality. I don't think that Pepperdine was a bad place by any stretch of the imagination. I thought it was a fantastic place. Like, at that time and point in my life, when you are learning how to, when you're learning how to become an adult, like, it was a really good spot for me. I'm not still working at Pepperdine. You know what I mean? Like, it's not something that should be forever. And it's time and place. And the people that work in college athletics are almost exclusively from that world. And there is what always has frustrated me is the fact that those people don't treat it. They're running hundreds of millions of dollar businesses, and they don't treat it like that.
So here's
the reason why I had A&M too, because behind it, I'd rather have the Texas A&M job than I would rather have the Auburn or the Tennessee job. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, here's my thing with Auburn. I've said this numerous times this week. Auburn's a great job. It's a great place. It's a fantastic fan base. And I know I just said fan bases are overrated, but theirs is really good. It's very loyal. It's fairly realistic as a fan base. The majority of their fans went to school there, have family that went to school there. Their love for the place is not limited to the football team. That job is not great. That job can be great if Alabama or Georgia is great. It's really hard to be great if Alabama and Georgia are great.
That's why I put it number three.
And I'm not even sure that right now, given the fact that I'm not convinced Nick Saban's walking away anytime soon, and Kirby Smart's just getting started, I'm not convinced that I'd even put it third.
The reason why I put it third is because I look at, to me, the next two choices for me are Auburn and Tennessee. And the reason why I put it third is when you look at Tennessee, you do not have access to great in-state talent. And further, you look at when Tennessee rolled. When they rolled, Alabama was in complete and utter disarray. Georgia was at a program low. South Carolina was going winless at times, and Clemson was largely irrelevant. North Carolina was irrelevant, and Kentucky and Vanderbilt were exactly the punchline that they are, like Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Like that's exactly what the Tennessee job was. So now you factor in the fact that not only is South Carolina a significantly better program, Georgia is now an elite program or becoming an elite program. Florida is still always, in my opinion, still going to be a better job. And Clemson is a national power, and Dabo Swinney's not going anywhere anytime soon. So I look at all those factors, and for me, if I'm a coach and I'm trying to win as many games as possible, I think I have a better shot at winning more games at Auburn than I do at Tennessee.
Oh, I agree with that completely. I don't think Tennessee's a good job. I'm on record saying it. I don't think it's a good job. I think in the hierarchy of SEC jobs, I don't think it's a good one. I think it's only a good one in the eyes of older people who remember the glory days of Peyton Manning and T. Martin, et cetera. That's it. That's what I believe. I think it's a worse job than South Carolina. I think it's on the par with Kentucky and Arkansas. I do. People remember, young people, the people that you're recruiting, they have no recollection at all.
I only put it higher than that because I do think that if you max out Tennessee, I think the ceiling at Tennessee from a network, from a institutional perspective, I think the ceiling is higher.
And you might be right. I don't feel so strongly about it that I'm going to fight you about it. But on the list of national jobs that could pop up, it does not even register for me. If I'm Scott Frost, who's super hot right now, if I'm Campbell, who's super hot right now, that is not a job that I take.
I agree with you.
I sit at Central Florida before I take that job.
Ooh.
Now, I sit in Central Florida, and I'm nervous as hell because this could fall apart in a minute. But that is not the job I want.
Ooh, that's a tough thought for me because, like, I know it's not the same sport. But
I know don't get me wrong. I don't do it, but that's not the job I take. I take a job, but I don't take that job.
That's the other issue. If, like, we're looking at it from the coach's perspective, I understand it's not the same sport, but, like, think about Cliff Godwin. Cliff Godwin was offered the Alabama gig, like, five times after his first year at East Carolina. Alabama's a similar job in baseball, perhaps even lower than the Tennessee football job. In fact, it's definitely lower, but he gambled on, I've got a lot of guys coming back. I can do this again, and I can parlay it into another better job. And Cliff's still at East Carolina.
Oh yeah, no. If I'm Frost, I'm out. But that's not the one I want.
Okay.
Before we keep going, the podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All the underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. It's Jlowe, Jlowe, at communitymtg.com. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, that kind of thing, Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get you, more of your customers, the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben Brown at 443-935-5013. Ben is waiving the setup fee for Rebel Grove subscribers. For Oxford Crystal Beer Garden listeners, a $500 savings. So call him today. All right. So we're through four of them.
Okay. And so
The next one's kind of in a group, I'm guessing?
Yes. And so the next group, to me personally, I think it's the discussion between Ole Miss and Arkansas. And I look at both jobs, and I look at the fact that you look at Arkansas when they had their best season, the 2011 season, they had Bobby Petrino. And I think Bobby Petrino is a very, very, very good football coach.
Yeah, he's a borderline sure thing.
And then you look at, okay, Houston had some good runs. I think he won, what, 11 games his first year, had another 10-win season, and then I think he got close to 10 with McFadden, that group. But I look at Ole Miss, and I look at, all right, well, Cutcliffe won 10. Houston won 9 twice. Freeze won 9 and 10. The only guy I would even say that is a, like, really, really good football coach, like, as it pertains to being a football coach. I'm not talking about recruiter and whatnot, but, like, the only guy that I think is Cutcliffe in that group. And I look at that, and I'm like, you know, if I'm candidate A that is being sought after, I don't look at what Hugh Freeze and what Houston Nutt did and go, there's no way I can do that. I could see myself going, Petrino is kind of an animal. And Arkansas is, and when Petrino had his run, there was no A&M. I could sit there and go, while Arkansas probably has access to more money, I think with in-state talent, and I think all the other factors that you would consider with a program, I personally would rather take the Ole Miss job.
I'm with you completely.
So I have Arkansas 6, and then the next two is Missouri and Mississippi State. And personally, I would rather just be in the East than be in the West. And I think you can kind of, I hate to say it, I know we talked about this morning that we both hate gimmicks, but I think I could kind of gimmick my way to more wins at Missouri than I could at Mississippi State.
Now I'd put State ahead of Missouri.
I mean, I'm not going to, like, go to my grave battling that. But, you know, I guess the flip side of it is, all right, well, look at Missouri. Really, there's only been one guy that's won there. It's Gary Pinkel. There have been a few guys that have had runs at Mississippi State. So, okay, yeah, I can agree with you on that. Okay, I can flip 7. So I go Florida. My list is Florida 1, A&M 2, Auburn 3, Tennessee 4, Ole Miss 5, Arkansas 6, Mississippi State 7, and then Missouri 8.
Yeah. I might even put Ole Miss ahead of Tennessee, but I can understand the Tennessee argument. I think Ole Miss is potentially a great job. And here's why. I've said this for a long time. I think Ole Miss and South Carolina are very similar. There's talent. You can win. I think you can be an 8-9 win coach at Ole Miss. I do. And I think the expectations would never, and when I say this, I don't mean the outliers. I mean the masses.
Sure.
I think the masses would love you. They would revere you. The group of people that would be frustrated with 9-3 at Ole Miss is so small that it wouldn't register.
That's fair. I'm looking at it from the perspective of where is the ceiling the highest? And to me, the ceiling at Tennessee is a little bit.
Sees the highest, but I'll say this again. I said this the other day about Ole Miss, and I know you'll agree with this. This isn't me arguing with you. It's just me making a point. I just watched Ole Miss with a good head coach. But Hugh Freeze is no sure thing. If Hugh Freeze tomorrow got the job at Arizona.
Okay.
Forget the massage stuff.
Yeah, I'm just the football coach, yeah.
If Hugh Freeze gets the job at Arizona, do I go, yeah, it's a good hire. Sure. Do I say, sure thing? Nope. Nope, because I'm not convinced that Freeze could put together a great staff. which is exactly what I saw in Oxford. I don't think he had a great staff in Oxford. I don't think he had a great coaching staff. I don't think he had a great recruiting staff by any stretch of the imagination. And I watched that team win 10 games, finish in the top 10, win the Sugar Bowl, and come one goofy-ass 4th-and-25 from the national playoff. So what's the ceiling at Ole Miss? The playoff. And if you get into the playoff, it's one game.
I agree with you. I do also think, though, that Tennessee was really, really wrecked by two horrific hires.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of my point.
But, like, Derek Dooley really should never have been considered. Like, he didn't even have a winning record at Louisiana Tech.
Like, no, he didn't.
He had one good season. Like, and then Butch Jones was, you know, you got two boosters going. One booster's going to Stillwater to go hire Mike Gundy, and another plane was going to Louisville to try and hire Charlie Strong. Like,
I do like Mike Gundy as a coach, by the way.
I do too.
If I were any one of these SEC jobs, before I made a hire, I'd call Mike Gundy just to make sure he was going to tell me no.
I agree with you.
Yeah, but here's my point about Tennessee, and then we'll move on. I'll let you have the last word. This will be my last word on Tennessee. When Tennessee won, the things that it had going for it, huge stadium, on TV every week, recruited nationally because they were on TV every week, and they were sexy. They're on TV every week still, but everybody else is too. They have a huge stadium, but everybody else has a big stadium. They have great facilities, but everybody else has great facilities. Everybody has all the money now, so everybody can fix the flaws with money. What does Tennessee have going for it? Eh? It's in the SEC. Got to play Alabama every year. Just don't like the job. It's just me. And I was in my 20s when they were dominating, and I thought, wow, that program's unstoppable. And since then, it's been pretty stoppable for the better part of two decades.
Well, shame on you for forgetting the Vol Navy and running through the T, because that still matters.
It does matter to kids growing up in Tennessee that are big Tennessee fans, and the percentage of those that end up being football prospects is really slim.
I agree with you on the premise that what made Tennessee relevant has been neutralized. I agree with you. I just look at it this way. I think if, for instance, David Shaw had the Ole Miss job or David Shaw had the Tennessee job, I think his record would be slightly better at Tennessee.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm distinguishing and deciphering between the jobs.
Okay. All right. Well, real quick, let's play a fun game.
All right.
We'll see in a month and a half how right or how wrong, if even any of us got one.
Okay.
All right. We'll make it easy. You get two guesses. And for the sake of this game, we'll say that all eight of these jobs open up.
Okay.
We'll just do your order. Florida. Give me two guys that are the next coach at Florida.
Mike Gundy.
Ooh.
Or I'll say Mike Gundy or Scott Frost.
Okay. I'll say Scott Frost or Charlie Strong.
Okay. All right. You can go off the I'll let you go first now on A&M.
Okay. I'm going to give them credit for having a lot of money and trying. So I'll say Chris Peterson or the cat at SMU.
Chad Morse.
Yeah.
All right. I will say James Franklin.
Ooh.
Or say James Franklin or.
Boy, he'd fit at A&M too, because he's kind of a guy who fits at places that have cults.
Oh, man, does he?
Oh, does he not fit A&M?
Oh,
he would make
my gosh.
A&M interesting now. Quick.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I'll say James Franklin or Jeff Brohm.
Okay. All right, so Tennessee, Dan Mullen, or Jeff Brohm.
All right, I'll say Dan Mullen or Mike Norvell.
Okay. All right, let's see, Auburn, you go. It's your turn.
Auburn.
No clue. Auburn's the hardest one.
Oh, my God. Because that's the thing, like, the first thought was, okay, well, we can't beat Saban by being Saban, so let's go gimmicky. And then they went gimmicky, and they're like, well, that doesn't work. So now you're going to go to, like...
Oh, it's going to be such a bad job because we're going to get to Gus in a minute, and you're going to be the guy that has to face Saban, Smart, your predecessor. Oh, it's going to be such a dramatic... You better have a thick skin, dude, here.
You know who makes so much sense, but he won't get it because of right now? Bielema makes sense at Auburn.
In a way.
I mean, you know what I mean?
It'll never happen, but yeah.
He's got a lot of Tuberville in him.
He does. He does. Bielema, if I'm Ross Bjork, Bielema's a call I make. I know I can't sell it to my fan base, but it's a call I'd want to make.
Yeah, he does beat him pretty regularly. All right, Auburn. Oh, man.
I know. It's impossible.
You know who I would have said? Like, if this were last year, I would have said, Larry Fedora.
Yeah, that's out.
But that's out.
Can I interrupt the game and give
sure.
you one name that comes to mind?
Yeah.
Greg Schiano.
Can see it. I'll say, and this is such a stab, I'll say Paul Christ.
Ooh.
And then I'll say Dino Babers. And by the way, that is... such a guess and such a stab.
Yeah. I'll say Schiano. And Charlie Strong.
Okay, I have no problem with either one of those. All right. Ole Miss, and I'll let you go first.
Okay. Mike Norvell or I don't think Wilson's a player that people say he is. I don't think Morris is the player people say he is. And I really don't know. Honestly, I have talked to so many different people who've said wait till November 1st to work on it that I'm kind of waited till November 1st to work on it. I'll say Norvell. And Blake Anderson.
All right, I'll say Norvell and Mike McIntyre.
I think McIntyre's hireable.
I'll say Norvell and Mike McIntyre.
Okay.
All right, so that brings us to Arkansas.
Gus Malzahn and Gus Malzahn.
Okay. I'll say Malzahn, and then if Malzahn ends up not working out. If Tulsa had won a few more games, I'd say Philip Montgomery makes sense there.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, Malzahn, I'm with you on that. There were the rumors that Norvell somewhat coveted that job. I don't think that's necessarily true.
I think he covets Ole Miss more than he does Arkansas.
I think that's fair. All right, that gives us Mississippi State and Missouri.
Okay. State, I'll say, they typically go the coordinator route.
That was what I was thinking too.
And yet, I don't know that they could go get a Jeremy Pruitt. I don't know that he would take that job.
Brett Venables?
Would he go to State? I mean, I know he wants to be a head coach.
I mean, Clemson and State, they're not Clemson mirrors Auburn more than it mirrors State.
And I mean, this is no slap at John Cohen, but his life as a baseball coach is going to hurt him here, I think.
I think so, but I also think that he has a pretty powerful phone number in his Rolodex that I think could help.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
whatever.
I'll say Norvell, and just because I'll say Jeremy Pruitt. I'm not sure I believe that.
All right, I'll say Brett Venables, and then I'll say. Would Luke Fickell take that job?
I'd have to think about it, wouldn't he? I mean, it's a $5 million job.
I'll say they try the Urban Meyer route one more time.
It worked.
I'll say they try that. And then Missouri.
No clue.
Oh, my God. Missouri feels like someone who's going to go raid the MAC, right?
Yeah, I mean, Jason Candle.
You know who I'd hire if I were in Missouri?
Who?
Mike Leach.
Oh, I agree with that completely. Now, is he going to take that job or is he going to Nebraska?
I don't think he's going to Nebraska. If
I'm Mike Leach and I'm offered the Missouri job, I take it. If I'm Missouri and I can get Mike Leach, I do it.
You know what I think could happen with Nebraska? I think they could wind up in a Les Miles situation. Talks break down with Frost, and then they wind up hanging on to Riley for another year.
Well, that's kind of like Missouri. I know this is not as fun for the game. If I'm Missouri and I'm not positive I've got a big name guy coming in, I give Barry Odom another year.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I'd rather the odds of it. The other issue is if I'm Missouri and 7 jobs are open, I hang on to Barry Odom. Unless I know that, like, if I can get Mike Leach, I'm getting Mike Leach. But if not, you know what I find interesting about our discussion? We did not put Matt Campbell anywhere.
Well, I think he's great. I've had another person in the industry say he's not a good fit in the South. I have no idea why that is. I don't even know what that means anymore.
Was Nick Saban a good fit in the South when he came down from Michigan State?
I'm with you. If you can coach football, you can coach football. I think Campbell does a fantastic job. He would be on my really short list. I know the buyout is problematic. Doesn't mean you can't work your way around it. He would be on my really, in fact, in some ways, he would be ahead of Frost on my list. Because Frost hasn't proven as much, though. Frost looks and sounds and acts the really dynamic, gonna win big part. I'll be surprised if he's a failure wherever he goes.
I agree. I'm hesitant of the fact that he's not.
There's no sure thing. You're back to that no sure thing.
He's not the only coach that's won at Central Florida.
No, he's not. He's not. Now, but when you watch him and you read about him and you look at his background.
No, I'm with you. And, you know,
he's worked for and stuff. The odds of him succeeding wherever he goes are pretty good. They really are. I mean, there's not much failure in his past.
I'm with you.
But a guy like Campbell, I mean, won at Toledo. He won at Iowa State. People don't win at Iowa State.
No, it's where jobs go to die.
I mean,
careers go to die, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, young guy, what's he, 38?
Yeah, I think when he got hired, he was 34. I think that's right.
Something like that. I mean, he's not 40 yet. He'd be... If I'm Iowa State, I'm trying to hang on to him, that's for sure. Some of these schools, when it's over, Jeffrey, they're going to have some PR to do.
Mm-hmm.
They should go to Strategic Partners and Media. It's a full-service advertising and public relations firm doing business throughout the country. SPM works with companies of all sizes, from Fortune 500 companies to local startups. They have a simple logic. They find a way to tell a story about their client that captivates an audience that will eventually do business with the client. SPM focuses first and foremost on developing a winning and unique strategy for their clients, whether that's through creating and implementing an aggressive digital and social media plan, producing a captivating television advertisement, or crafting a corporate communications plan to get any business through good or bad times. SPM always finds the right path forward. They've mastered their craft in the rough and tough political advertising world. You can get access to all of that experience and all of that knowledge by going to Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. We're also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chasa Charters in Biloxi, Mississippi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. John knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip for visitors this time of year is an inshore trip for speckled trout or triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John, 228-348-7817. We're also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their site, comerheatingandair.com. Check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast. You get $20 off. Contact Eric, 662-934-3846, or Shane, 662-832-8749. Just touch on a couple things real quick. So we'll finish with something quote fun, end quote. Grizzlies off to a good start, 3-1. Anything shocked you in the first week and a half of the NBA?
No, because I kind of thought coming into the season, the teams that were rebuilding with stars, I thought that was going to kind of take an adjustment period because historically it has. So when you look at Oklahoma City, not exactly coming out of the gates firing, that wasn't really a surprise to me. Minnesota not coming out of the gates, it wasn't a surprise to me. I do think the one thing that is particularly interesting about the Grizzlies is that while they did not look good last night, a lot of these darts that you kind of threw at the wall, I thought thus far through four games, I thought they've looked pretty good. Chalmers was awful last night, but Chalmers has been pretty good. Tyreek has been pretty good. Dylan Brooks looks like he found a second-round hit. He looks like a rookie last night, but I do think that Dylan Brooks has kind of shown the gamer mentality, and I do think that their second unit is pretty good, and then when you're able to not have to play Andrew Harrison and you're able to not have to play Jarrell Martin, when Jamichael Green, Ben McLemore, and Wayne Seldon get back, I think that I do think that that could be a 45-win team.
Yeah, I do too, and I feel bad because I thought I actually bought the they're done narrative, and they're not done.
I was kind of there too, but and I get it. It's only four games, but there's so much more athletic right now, and you realize like. Even last night when they laid just an absolute egg, defensively, man, they're pretty darn good.
And that's the key. That's why the Spurs are so good. That's why the team that has surprised me, it's not the right word. The guy that has impressed me the most in the NBA so far, well, two people. One, I'm blown away by what Victor Oladipo has done in Indiana. And two, the improvement that Blake Griffin has made without Chris Paul as now the clear face of the Clippers has been impressive.
I agree with you 100%. And weirdly enough, it's almost like Patrick Beverley has allowed Blake Griffin to kind of become alpha. And to me, it still comes down to the same thing, though, with Griffin. Does he stay healthy? Because the sample size and the history suggests otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, probably have some sort of an injury. They're 3-0. They've looked good. Spurs are 4-0. The Rockets are 4-1. Just the one loss to Memphis. Memphis is 3-1. Golden State's lost twice. Thunder's lost twice. Timberwolves have lost three times, which I know doesn't surprise you. It kind of does surprise me, but you had a better read on that than I did. I like Washington. Surprised they lost to the Lakers. I think John Wall's right now one of the two or three most dynamic players in the league. And I love Milwaukee. I love the Bucks. And if the Bucks get Eric Bledsoe, they become a contender in the East.
Yes, I 100% agree with that.
The whole thing in the East.
I know we said we want to talk JFK, but I wanted to discuss this with you.
Okay.
What did you think of Game 2 of the World Series last night?
Well, I'm embarrassed to admit that I fell asleep. So I've got up and I saw the highlights and stuff. I have such, after watching the Cubs flail away at the Dodgers bullpen, I didn't think Houston would touch it. I'm tired of the people bitching about the home runs. Home runs are fun. A little surprised, frankly, that the Dodgers bullpen didn't close the door. Impressed by Houston. And, you know, it gets interesting back in an American League park now. You know how that works.
And further, Houston is a much better team in the playoffs at home than they are on the road. I know that's a scorching take, but I want to ask you this. What did you think of pulling Rich Hill before the third time through the lineup?
Stupid.
And what did you think of bringing in Jensen or Kenley Jansen? What did you think of bringing him in to get six outs when he pitched the night before?
I didn't like either move, and I was surprised that Dave Roberts made both of them because I think Roberts has done a phenomenal job this year managing the Dodgers, both long-term and short-term. I think he's a great game manager. I thought he outmanaged Joe Maddon throughout the NLCS and outmanaged Torey Lovullo throughout the NLDS, two guys that are both really good managers. I don't know why they panicked on Hill. One, he throws different curveballs. So the fact that you've seen him a couple of times doesn't necessarily mean you're going to hit him the third time. Two, by going so early, I think he went four innings. You made that bullpen get exposed. You don't want Houston to see these guys so much that they get to time them up. Go back 1 year. Go back 1 year in the World Series. Cleveland had a 3-1 lead, but the Cubs had an advantage. They had seen that Indian bullpen so much that as the series went on, they started hitting them, started timing them up. They hit Miller and Shaw and those guys later in that series. So I didn't like that part of it. And then you've used Jensen the night before. I know it's become the thing. The thing is, you go 162 games and two series where you don't use him for multiple innings, and now you throw him out there the second night, all the adrenaline. It's been hot there in the hundreds. It's a heat wave. I didn't like it at all.
Man, I went back and forth because throughout the season, he had gotten six out saves a lot.
Yeah, a few times.
And
but you're pitching in the World Series. Your adrenaline's pumping. You pitched the night before. It's super hot.
I just thought that you were better off. Like, to me, I thought maintaining home field advantage was do or die for them. So I was okay with it.
What they have to do is they have to make sure they win one of these next two games so that they're not. They need to win game three so that they're not tempted to go to Kershaw in game four.
I agree with that. I think that you can't move Kershaw no matter what. I was actually okay with pulling Rich Hill because even though he'd only given up one run, it was the ultimate example of it felt like every single AB, it was teetering on a blowout.
Well, that's kind of how his pitching, his outings are. He doesn't overpower you.
I mean, there were some really loud outs against him.
Yeah, it happens. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's, you know how the postseason is. If you get a short outing from a starter, it has a carryover effect for two or three more games in a series.
Oh, there's no question about that. I mean, yes.
And here's the scorching hot take. It's really hard to win the World Series.
Yeah. I mean,
it's really hard to win the World Series. There have been a lot of really good teams that don't get a World Series one.
97 Indians. The Indians last year and this year. I mean,
this year. The Cardinals 2 years ago that won 101 games or whatever. It's hard to win a World Series.
Yeah.
It can turn on you so fast.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where I understood every move he was making, and I think he was in that position where you're going to get hammered either way. To me, the fact that it took so, like, I thought the Dodgers deserved to win game one, and then I thought the way that the entire game played out, I thought Houston deserved to win game two. And I thought Roberts put himself in position to steal a game. It came back to bite him late because he ran out of bullpen, but I was okay with it because I thought that they had, I mean, basically, man, they had two hits and they were leading the game, and I thought they had a chance to steal it, and he made the moves that I thought were the moves to steal the game. I do agree, though, with every point that you're making about the more and more chance. They are major league hitters. Inevitably, like Justin Verlander made one mistake last night and it was 1-0. And then he made a second mistake and it was 3-1.
Yeah, these are two really good teams. And Houston's offense is phenomenal. It has been all year. It's carried that pitching staff when they struggled in the middle of the season. This should be a great series. It's two teams that won more than 100 games each. So I'm glad it's 1-1. I think it's going six or seven games. I still think the Dodgers win it, but that was a big loss for LA last night, and they'll have to go get one of. They need to get game three, or it puts Roberts in a weird spot.
You have to have Darvish, who has experience pitching at Minute Maid. You have to have him be the better pitcher in game three.
He's got to go win the game because you don't want to hand it to Alex Wood or get into position where you're tempted to go to Kershaw on short rest because sometimes he's not great on short rest.
For me, that's the non-negotiable. I'm not even like, I don't even care. And I've been on the Kershaw playoff that he's a bum in the playoff. I've always thought that's outrageous because I watched him dominate the Cardinals when he was on full rest. And then Cardinals did get him on short rest. But I mean, I always just go back. He had a start where he goes the complete distance, and then the Cardinals win in extra innings when he wasn't in there, but he didn't even give up an earned run. Like, I've seen him be dominant, but man, to me, it's non-negotiable because I've also seen him get absolutely filleted when he tries to come back on short rest.
If I'm the Dodgers, he's pitching game five. He's pitching game five, and he's available out of my bullpen for an inning or two in a game seven.
Can we talk about, quickly before we finish, can we talk about how insane it is that a guy struck out 11 in seven innings and only threw 83 pitches?
He's the best pitcher on earth.
All right, this one hypothetical was posed to me, so I pose it to you. For one season, one game, and a career, those are the three options. Who would you rather have, Randy Johnson or Clayton Kershaw?
One season?
One season, one game, and a career.
Okay. One at their primes?
We'll say Randy Johnson. Yes. Yeah, Randy Johnson's, I guess Randy Johnson, what his prime was probably his early 30s, although he was awesome in his late 30s. But we'll say when Randy Johnson was throwing 100 miles an hour from the side with a 90-mile-an-hour slider that guys would get the flu mysteriously and then be back 24 hours, left-handed hitters would get the flu when he was throwing.
Yeah, one game I'd say Randy Johnson. One season I would say Clayton Kershaw. And one career, without even a moment's hesitation, Clayton Kershaw.
The difference for me was I said season Johnson.
And I can see that because he had a couple seasons where he was just phenomenal. Kershaw's had so many seasons where he's phenomenal that we've begun to take it for granted.
Well, Andy was better early.
Yeah. Kershaw, to me, could walk away today, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I agree.
He's just watching him work is, you know, he's beaten your team and he's beaten mine. Yet when he beats you, it doesn't really sting. You just kind of tip your hat. So that dude's great.
Yes, 1,000% agree with that.
All right, before we finish up, let me tell you one more thing that's also not negotiable. The best place to go get fresh cuts in Oxford is not negotiable. It's LB's Meat Market, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. I know Jeffrey loves the bone-in ribeye. I do too. My family loves fillets, and you can't go wrong with the 8-ounce bacon wrap fillet at LB's. It is different. It is fantastic. If you like strips, they've got that. Briskets, it's holiday season. If you want to get your beef tenderloin, your whatever it might be, you call your skirt steak, whatever you might be looking for, you call Greg Jones, 662-259-2999. Tell him what you want. He'll have it ready for you. You will not regret it. It is fantastic. They've got also the free-range Joyce Farm chicken. They've got the locally raised pork from Home Place Pastures in Como. They get fresh seafood straight from the Gulf. So much there. The sausages are fantastic. You should try those, whether it's as a meal or an appetizer. And then they've got a beer fridge right on your left when you walk in. Grab a six-pack. Tell Greg that you heard about it on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack is just $6 at LB's Meat Market. 662-259-2999. All right. Last thing, they're releasing the files. I think the server's overloaded. The JFK files being released today, 50 years later. Are you interested?
Yes, because all of the mystery that surrounds JFK, from his personal life to the assassination. Because, I mean, call me a conspiracy theorist or what, but it's like, I just find it really, really hard to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone.
Do you really? You and I have talked about this before. One of these days, we're going to do a whole show on this.
Yes.
I think he did act alone.
The forensic evidence about the gun firing, and I'm sure there's going to be gun people, and I admit, I'm not a gun guy, and so... But the forensics, to me, suggest there had to have, on top of, like, okay, let's say he was the only person firing the gun. It's like, I just really, really find it hard to believe that he acted alone. Like, that I don't know, man. There's too much that doesn't add up, and JFK made too many enemies.
He did have a lot of enemies. The reason I believe he acted alone is because if there was a conspiracy, multiple people knew, if multiple people know someone talks, someone has a deathbed confession, someone writes it, someone lets that out, that's too big of a secret. There was no, you go back and you read like Case Closed.
Yeah.
You know, Gerald Posner's phenomenal book. There was a security failure. There was Secret Service failed. He snuck through the cracks. He never should have. They had him in their sights a week earlier, 10 days earlier in Dallas. It was a different era. It was a naive era in our country's history. And it only took one idiot, and he got up there and he had a clean look. And the limousine driver made a mistake. There were so many mistakes that make it feel like it had to be a conspiracy. And in many ways, it's because he was a popular young president with a beautiful young family. And I think it was so difficult for people, and I wasn't alive yet, but it had to be so difficult for people to think that guy killed Kennedy.
I have less reservations about that, because his marksman record shows that he was very capable of pulling off that feat. My bigger issue is that I think also, given the climate of the world at the time, the climate of the United States of America at the time, I think that there was more incentive to cover up than there was to just say he acted alone.
Well, I'll be curious to see what's in the files. I know it's going to be heavily redacted and stuff. Maybe it'll be some real sexy story and they'll say LBJ did it. LBJ was behind it. The CIA did it. Maybe we'll have some great big revelation.
Are they really going to release a file that says the vice president of the United States was capable? I guess that, to me, that's the best case for that there's not much in it. The thought of Lyndon B. Johnson being able to pull that off seems, and the fact that we'd be willing to say that, you know, a former, you know, that they're going to besmirch a former president of the United States. And I guess, hey man, with the man that's in office right now, I guess you can't rule out anything. But to me, that seems more unlikely.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that the classified documents either don't lend to any real conclusion, or they support the Oswald acted alone theory.
Yeah, I think that that's probably what's going to happen.
It's amazing how all these years later, it's still such a topic of conversation. I mean, John Kennedy would be, had he not, if he were, quote, still alive today, he'd be, what, 100 years old?
Yes.
I mean, it's hard to believe that it's still such a topic, but it is.
Yeah, right? Yeah, no, he'd be over 100, right?
Yeah, I think so, because he was 46 when he died. That was in 63, so it's right at 100 years.
Yeah. I mean, he is, it is, it does just go to show, you know, it's better to go out young and still good looking than it is to have rest of life get you down.
I guess so. All right. On that note, really appreciate all the time. You're great. Enjoy the Grizzlies tonight, and we'll touch base here soon.
All right, my man.
That's Jeffrey Wright. I'm Neil McCready. That does it for today's Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Thanks to Jeffrey. Thanks to all of our advertisers. Thanks to you for listening. We'll be back next week with, I don't know, I'm not even going to try to predict what it'll be. Probably NFL at the midpoint. We'll talk some NFL, talk some more college football, some coaching searching stuff, that kind of thing, on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Until then, take care.